Hey, everybody. Chris here from Macro Ops. Look, we send out a bunch of free content during the week, not just this podcast, but we send out a number of emails during the week about some research, some different segments, some things we're looking at. We even have a kind of a summary at the end of the week. If you're not already subscribed, go to macro-ops.com. And pretty much anywhere you can click on something and enter your email, and you'll start getting some emails from us a couple times a week. And I tell you, it is a lot of value, a lot of great content. It's not ads, it's just market commentary. What's going on in the world of systems trading? What's going on in global macro? What's going on in value? What we're seeing, what we're looking at. And we also talk about some of our own personal hacks and tools and tricks and things that we've developed. So go over there, macro-ops.com, add your email. This week, well, today, Alex and I do a short session, short for us, under 2 hours. That's actually only a 44 minute long session about the shippers. Alex does go pretty deep, and that actually is one of those free content pieces about the shippers. We sent that email out last week. We're talking about it this week, and it's a great session. Get in there. Definitely sign up and have a listen. If you guys have any questions, any feedback, please hit me up, chris@macroops.com, Chris D Macro on Twitter and Instagram. So hope you guys enjoy it. Let me know what you think.
Hi, this is Christy with Alex from Macro Ops.
Close. That's close. Hey, how's it going, Chris?
You all look alike.
It's the blonde hair,
right? That blonde stuff of his is pretty spectacular.
It is.
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. I heard you had a good trip in Mexico.
Yeah, that was always a good time to get to Mexico and finally get out of the. I went from -14 to 92 degrees in the same day. It was pretty great.
That's quite a bit of a temperature change. Yeah.
Can't beat it. So we just wrapped up a week. My goodness. The Ides of March were yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And halfway through the month and haven't crashed despite Zero Hedge's and Jesse Felder's warnings.
They're going to be right one of these days, though. So, you know, we'll get egg on our face soon enough.
I feel so bad. I mean, they're great. I just wanted to do a quick recap. We're slightly off the highs, if that's even possible. Closing this week, that's a down week last week in major equity indexes. Let's at least clarify that. And like kind of a slightly up week this week. Is that approved? Has anybody allowed that one yet? Or is that what's going on? Do you have any idea there?
Yeah, I think that's kosher. I think you could say we definitely finished up on the week. We started a little low and then we slowly made our way up. Pretty quiet week though.
Yeah. So 11 straight weeks up. One big, massive down week, and then an inside bar on the week, an indecisive move, and bears just can't seem to make a run, no matter what they do. They just can't seem to get a hold of it.
They got to be getting pretty frustrated. But I mean, you got to think we're getting close to that point where they just capitulate and start buying. I don't know, maybe in another 2 weeks or something. I mean, it's gotta hurt watching this thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, we're getting close to like on the S&P, we're getting close to the upper Bollinger band on the weekly time frame. But we're still a little bit away from that. And then also, I mean, you're the mark guy. I heard that we printed a 9 on the weekly time frame. I don't know if you look at it on the weekly on the S&P. I'm not sure if that's true, but
well, I can easily have a look. Yeah, that just seems. What's have a look. Yes, on the weekly.
Now to me,
yep,
I don't...
we got a
that's exactly
perfected
right.
Eight and a perfected nine right up near the top of the weekly Bollinger Band. Though we got room to go to the top, that doesn't mean just because we've got a nine. Getting above on the weekly to negate this sell signal would be a weekly close above 29.31.25. If we can, if you close above that on a weekly basis, not an intra week or daily basis, but the Friday like it is today, if you can close above that, that'll negate it, and that'll be according to my systems, that would be a trend extension, and we'd be off to the races, like leaving everybody in the dust. But this is a, if not a good sideways area, a potential, you know, could take a few weeks to work its way out. But this, yeah, this could be a secondary top.
Yeah, I mean, looking at everything else that I look at, I don't really use the mark, but maybe I should. But the just like the credits markets look good. Spreads keep tightening. The sentiment indicators still got room to run higher, so there's like no flashing warning signals there. I mean, yeah, there's I mean, really nothing to be super cautious about right now, so I don't see it. And then you have rates moving up too, so you have bonds moving up, which everybody is saying that's a bearish thing, because you know, bond markets are, you know, smelling something that equities aren't. But I, you know, at least in the shorter term, that's a pretty strong tailwind for stocks if we got interest rates going down. So, yeah. And then the dollar finished the week a little bit lower. So I don't know, maybe we'll get a little
that
bit
surprised
of a dollar,
me.
Dollar. It did it. Yeah. I don't, yeah. I mean, it's, we'll see. It's still in its trading range. So I just put on a small short dollar position this week, but I don't know. I mean, currencies have just been choppy, at least on the longer time frame for the last couple of months. So we'll see what happens. But it would be nice if we got a little pullback in the dollar, and that would definitely be pretty good for risk assets. So, I don't really. It's kind of a quiet week. I don't see anything to be super concerned about at the moment.
You know, the only thing we got going on. We got Brexit at the end of the month, and I mean, this is absolutely what it looks like, right? You have one of the biggest global macro events in, I mean, perhaps maybe not the decade, but this half of the decade for sure, going on and, you know, affecting almost every other major currency at, you know, to some extent, international trade agreements, all sorts of visas and immigration and work status. And that's actually the podcast with Ben Hockman. We talked a handful about that. He's a British expat working in France now. So, all of that lining up, we got a weekly weekly reversal at least a weekly inflection point on the S&P. We got the dollar kind of, you know, all global currencies except us or Argentina. That we got above 42 this week.
I know.
Back under 40 to close.
Yeah, now we're back under 40. So we'll see. If you look at just like the rest of the EM FX complex, things like the Mexican peso and stuff is actually looking pretty good for them versus the dollar. So I don't know. At least from my vantage point, still too early to tell. I don't. Yeah. Really, I'm slightly bearish the dollar, but I'm willing to quickly change that opinion. Don't really have a strong take at the moment.
So what does that mean? That means we got to go searching for some obvious signals. And as beautiful as this transition is about to be, I will take a tip, or you know, you can Bitcoin me, whatever you want, for this amazing transition into your amazing write-up this week. On the shippers, the opportunity in shippers.
Yeah, that was smooth. I didn't know where you're going with that. That was really good, Chris.
Begging for tips was where I was going.
Yeah. Well, there you go, man. Somebody Venmo this guy. Let's talk some boats. Let's talk boats.
Boats and ships and Baltic dries and all that. All right, so we have, I just want to take, this is like one of the most interesting takeaways that I got there. And when I see something like this, I'm like, okay, the timing is not going to be all that easy. But we've had, according to, Martin Stopford's excellent book, we've had 23 shipping cycles since 1743. Let's just start it off there, as this most likely is a very big shift in, I guess, modern era shipping cycles. Mm-hmm. Why don't you take it from there?
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, you're right on with the timing thing. The shipping industry has been in a bear market for the better part of a decade. I mean, that's actually depending on which index you're looking at. If you're looking at the Harpex shipping index, which is, accounts not just for the Baltic dry stuff, but you also have regular container charter rates. That's been in a bear market since roughly 2005. And then the Baltic dry indexes, they peaked out in like roughly 2008. So it's been a long bear market. And like you said, there's been 23 of these bull bear market cycles in shipping for a long time. And also I remember when I was digging into this, I don't have the exact stats, but I think it was like going back to 1900, the worst performing sector out of any sector in the U.S. was actually the shipping industry. So it returned like a nominal 6%, or no, a real 6% return on average or something like that over since 1900. So it's an industry that's always been plagued by horrible capital cycles where too much money flows in, people get overextended, build too many ships, and then there's just a total supply glut, and then it takes years and years to work that off. And I think the reason for that is because it takes roughly 2 years from time of ordering a boat for it to actually get built and then put in service. And then once those things are in service, the average lifespan is 25 years. So, you know, I mean, it's that whole like kind of timing thing, which you see it in all like boom bust cycles. The longer the time between decision making and the consequence of those decisions, then the more extended that these like reflexive bubbles can become. So I think that's why the shipping industry is so horribly cyclical. But you know, eventually it's going to have another bull market, whether that starts, you know, in the next couple of months or next year or in 2 years, I don't know. But looking at a number of companies right now, I mean, you're seeing the supply and demand of the overall industry balance out a lot more. There's a lot of ships have been scrapped. The order book, which just measures the amount of ships that are on order, has come down a ton. And then you have a lot of these companies that, I mean, the stocks are trading at like half to a third of their net asset value. And that's going off using not their accounting metrics, but the secondhand purchase market. So, which is a fairly liquid market. So, I mean, the fact that you have that, I mean, you have some of these stocks are trading at like 1 year of normalized cash flows, which is pretty insane. So, I mean, if you're a patient investor, it's maybe not a bad time to buy some of these, put them in your portfolio. And if you're a trader, definitely put them on your radar and start watching these guys. And we could go through kind of like the little thesis that I wrote up and just talk about like some of the coming potential catalysts over the next year, if you're interested.
Well, yeah. Yeah. You listed five. So this first, we got about five different catalysts there. Are you pouring bourbon already? It's 10:30 in the morning. What is happening?
Am I not supposed to be pouring bourbon right now?
That's an afternoon drink. It should be tequila in the morning, good sir.
Oh man, I'm embarrassed.
How embarrassing. Yeah. So we started out with the 1-2 regulatory punch, which my guess is not, I'm not going to guess, but obviously there's a lot of global warming type of clean air initiatives that probably have a lot to do with this industry. Is that right?
Yep. So There's been a couple of them. There was last year we had they required new costly ballast water treatment systems. And then in 2020, there's this new regulation called IMO 2020, and it's a new global regulation that's aimed at reducing airborne sulfur pollution. So it's essentially like they shippers have to reduce their fuel, their sulfur level in their fuels from 3.5% to a 0.5%. And so there's a number of ways that they could go about this. They can install they're really expensive kind of scrubbers into the ships, and that's going to scrub the sulfur levels from their fuel, and so they could continue to burn bunker fuel, which is really dirty, sulfur-heavy fuel. Or they can move to burning marine gas oil. Both of these things are going to be pretty bullish for charter rates. Just looking at the first one, scrubbers. Well, there's the one part is scrubbers are expensive, so that takes a lot of capital to buy these things and install them, and that means these shipping companies have less money to buy new ships with. So that's good for the future supply outlook of ships. And secondly, is if you want to install one of these scrubbers, that means they're going to have to be dry docked. And they're not going to be out shipping goods around the world, so that means less supply on the market, which effectively means that's a big push for charter rates to move up. And then going to gas oil, the ships can burn marine gas oil without making really any changes, but it's a lot more expensive, and so it's. I think it was Wood Mackenzie. They calculated that the move in switching over to gas oil, which is what most of these ships are probably going to do for the first couple of years, is going to increase costs for the industry for roughly, I think, like $50-60 billion by next year. And that's gonna it's going to represent a jump in fuel expense of around 50%. And fuel expense is the largest expense for shippers. And so that's a big deal, and that's going to change the behavior for these shippers. So like what happens is when a ship gets chartered out, it's the person the company that's chartering the ship is the one who's usually paying for the fuel cost. And since its fuel cost makes up such a big part of those of the expense, these shipping companies are going to move, and they're going to start slow, what's called slow steaming their ships, which is basically bringing down their ship speed from 12 to 13 knots down to roughly 10-9 knots. That doesn't sound like a lot, but what that's going to do is effectively take anywhere from 15 to 20% of the dry bulk shipping supply off the market overnight. And so, I mean, that's a pretty substantial change in the supply of ships on the water. And so you have that, and then just coupled with those regulations coming on, a lot of the new ships are being built with the scrubbers. But like I said, there's, a lot of those ships aren't going to come onto the water for a while. And then with that, with the new regulation and the change in the expense structure, it's going to drive a lot of these companies to go ahead and just scrap their ships earlier than they would have. And so, and when you have a lot of these companies scrapping ships, that's bullish for charter rates, and that's bullish for the entire industry. So, you have a couple of people that are predicting that around 2020 we're going to see a supply shock. That's going to stem not just from the slow steaming of the entire fleet, but also the scrapping of some of the older ships, and then just the balance of the existing fleet, slow steaming, and then just through aging, because a lot of the boats on the water are old, and they're nearing their just natural age for to be junked.
Do you to the marine oil, marine gas oil, is that does that come from crude? Is that I mean, like, who's where's the who are the big suppliers in that? What type of energy is that from? I don't know anything about it, that's why I ask.
Yeah, it's the same. It's just a cleaner fuel. It's just a lower sulfur fuel. So like bunker oil is literally bottom of the barrel stuff. So yeah, when you refine petroleum, the bunker fuel is the nasty stuff that sits at the bottom. Gas oil is just cleaner. It's just a cleaner petroleum product.
Got it. Got it. So we got the supply, we got the regulations on what they need to burn, how they need to clean it, per potential speeds, and then upgrading everything. And then we get into good old Basel 4.
Yeah, Basel 4. So that's another thing. This is another new regulation that's going to have a put a bullish tailwind behind the shipping sector. So Basel 4 was part of the new big banking regulations that came out after the great financial crisis. And what it means for the shipping industry is that's essentially a lot of the credit that used to be available to these shipping companies to order new boats, because boats are extremely expensive. And since they have a long shelf life, like I said, they average around 25 years, they would just go, open a line of credit, borrow, build a ship, and then pay it off over its lifespan. But under the new Basel IV regulation, banks now have to account for the volatility of the asset that they're loaning against. And like we
Well,
talked
that's
about,
just funny talk.
yeah, I know, right? What a crazy idea.
Volatility is just wacky. Who would have to worry about that?
It really is. So I don't know where they got that idea, but so yeah, and like we were talking about at the beginning, the shipping industry is, you could say, just a tad volatile. So essentially, that means that a lot of the banks, and it's mainly the big European banks that have been the primary lenders to the shipping industry over the last century. Those sources of financing are just going away almost entirely, and the ones who are still going to be running small loan books to the industry, they are requiring much higher amounts of equity financing. So instead of let's say back in 2005, 2006, in the run up to the last shipping bubble, you could get a 90% plus loan to value financing for your building your ship. And that's essentially, it was that kind of, easy, cheap financing that led to the glut in shipping that drove this bear market for the last 10, 12 years. And so, yeah, I mean, now new vessel orders require 30% plus in equity financing. So that's a lot tougher to build ships. And that's why we've seen the order book. That's one of the reasons why we've seen the order book come down so much.
Yeah, that's especially when you're in a market where you can get 0% interest on pretty much anything. That's a tough one to deal with, but so the next point you bring up, capital cycle, supply and demand and deficit, which I guess is in essence what we're just talking, you're kind of leading into here.
So I mean all this is part of the capital cycle, right? I mean, the capital cycle is just like the aggregate of all of this behavior of people, thinking that this time is different and they're not thinking long term, so they're making decisions that are going to affect the long term, but as they won't see the impact for many years. And so, so we have the regulations, the changing in the fin in financing, and then we just have the present, like, supply and demand fundamentals of the actual shipping markets itself. So because I mean, if you look at, like, dry bulk shipping is extremely capital intensive business, which is why it adheres to the capital cycle so closely. You have roughly, I think it's over 10,000 vessels in the global fleet the last time I checked. Like I said, each vessel has an average lifespan of 25 years. And so just the way the numbers work out, essentially every year you're scrapping 300 to 500 new vessels. And so that means you have to build 300 to 500 new vessels each year just to keep your top line number the same, right? And that's not accounting for growth. I mean, so if you look at global growth, which averages a couple percent a year, at least lately, so you got to add on that to your demand numbers too. But if just going back, like, the last few years, because of this extended bear market, pessimism has started to finally change the behavior of the shipping companies. And you know, it's also being forced on them, like we said, because of the new regulations, and the financing isn't so easy to come from. But so if you just take the last couple of years, and for example, instead of seeing the normal 300 to 500 new vessels being built every year just to keep the supply of ships the same, the last few years we've seen on average 50 vessels built per year. So we've
Is
the markets, yeah.
that have to do anything to do with the super tankers at all being, obviously much larger than historically? Does
Yeah,
that come into play in any way?
that's a good question. I think that might impact it a little bit, but I mean, we're talking like specifically more like the dry bulk market, which is primarily iron ore, coal, I mean, dry goods. And so that's less, I don't think that really factors in that much, at least to those basic numbers. Like I mean, the reason why is just because, I mean, these companies, the shipping companies, can't get the financing anymore, and they've been, I mean, over the last ever since the peak of the bear market in like 2006, 2008, or whenever you want to call it in shipping, there's been a bunch of rolling little, bull bear markets, right? And so every little like uptick in the Baltic Dry Index, you see shipping companies, they've over the last few years they've started ordering new ships again. And then the glut comes, that they take those ships on order 2 years later, and then everything collapses and prices, are depressed. And like if you look at prices right now, we're near in the BDI, we're I think it's like the third or fourth time it's been this low for the period that we have data going back to the early 1980s. So charter rates are extremely depressed, and you've had a number of companies go belly up over the last 5, 6 years. And so really just the psychology of the whole industry has finally started to shift, because money is tighter. These guys aren't as optimistic. And now a lot of them have just been in survival mode. So yeah, so we've seen the order book has come down a ton. And let's see, there's like yeah, if you look at the dry bulk fleet, just the growth year over year growth relative to dry bulk trade year over year growth, the market's been in deficit since 2000, roughly two like mid 2016. So that means dry bulk trade is outgrowing the growth in the fleet, and that's just bringing the market back into balance. And so that's a very bullish thing over the long term. And just as long as shipping companies don't get crazy with ordering new ships, and the order book doesn't spike over the next couple of years, then we should see that supply tighten a ton, and then charter rates eventually start a new bull market. And if that's the case, then some of these stocks we can see. I mean, like in, I don't know if you go back and study like the oil tanker bull market of the 90s. I mean, you could see these stocks 20, 30x. I mean, that wouldn't be unreasonable. So.
Yeah, and so obviously the big question, considering we just ca came out of China's, was it Parliament, Congress this past, I don't know, I've been out of town for a while, I forget. China, the big.
Two sessions, China's two sessions. Is that what you're
Yes,
talking about?
correct.
So China just got done with their two sessions. So like I explained in the note, China's really important when you're looking at the shipping industry. If you just go back and like how did we get here in the first place in shipping? Well, essentially like the last bull market was born off the back of the commodities boom and the China growth narrative of the early 2000s. And I mean, it was an epic bull market too. And you had cheap credit, very loose lending standards. And then that all added essentially to the huge historic ship construction boom that we saw around the same time. That construction boom, I think, more than doubled the size of the global fleet, which is why we've been in such an extended bear market. Because, like I said, these vessels last, 25 years, so it's taken a lot of time for these things to be aged out or scrapped, because a lot of these shipping companies have been working at below cost, so basically burning money. And so yeah, and the reason why China matters so much is because they account for, I think it's roughly, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I want to say it was, I put it in the note, I think it's like 70% or so of the iron ore trade. Iron ore is the majority of dry bulk goods, so a lot of iron ore, coal. So I think Chinese imports make up close to half of the Baltic dry trade. It's like 40 something percent.
41%, yeah.
Yeah, 41%. So if you look at a chart that I put in the note, it shows the year-over-year change in China ore, iron ore imports, and along with the Baltic Dry Index. And I mean they move
Diverging.
together. So
Yeah.
yeah,
We got a bit of a divergence right now,
yeah,
too.
recently, yeah, which is actually really interesting. But yeah, so it's if you want to know where Baltic Dry Index is going, then you have to understand the supply and demand dynamics of like the current of the global Baltic dry fleet, but then also even more importantly of just iron ore demand from China, because they have been significant, and maybe that's going to change over the next 5 to 10 years as India starts importing more stuff, which they are. And I think I mentioned this in the note, just in both countries, they've started to pay more attention to combating pollution. And what that means is that because if you look at the fuel sources that China uses, and same with India, in making and producing steel, their iron ore is really sulfur and ash heavy. So it's very dirty to burn. And so China, I mean, if you've been following their politics over the last 2 years, then you know that combating pollution is becoming a number one priority. And the big reasons for that is because the citizenry hates it, and so it's kind of a sore point for them, and the party's responsive to that because it can lead to unrest. And so they're really buckling down on, especially on heavy industry. And so for China to clean up its heavy industry and get cleaner burning fuel sources, they have to essentially come to other places like Brazil to import their iron ore, or Australia. And what that means, so I mean, like I said, iron ore, coal make up the majority of the BDI of the goods that are shipped. And so the more demand from China, India making these switches to cleaner fuels for their heavy industry, the more demand we're going to see for shipping in that area. So that's a long-term secular bullish trend for the shipping industry.
And then we're obviously coming in on the 100-year anniversary in about, was that 2 years? It looks like a little over 2 years. Everybody's expecting they're gonna, pad the books. They're gonna pump the numbers. They're gonna make everything look good, and obviously make optimism very high for a citizen of China. Very much a prideful experience. When we're in a strong bull market, everybody's pretty proud of where they live. When we're in a strong bear market or any bear market, people are pretty bearish on what's going on. So if the party's running around keeping things in order, it's going to be a lot easier if we're in a nice up move. So yeah, I guess probably to bring it home, it would be that we got that. This is a play going into the that as that starts to ramp up. And you want to start really pumping up your economy, pumping up GDP. We're obviously in a bit of we've definitely been pulling back for the last year or so, maybe 2 years in China, which is a ideal condition to turn it around, let people feel the pain a little bit, and then turn it around and manufacture whatever to get things going again. Is that
Right. Yeah, I mean that's essentially, and nobody knows, like, I mean we don't know how much China will juice their economy. I mean, everybody's looking at the big jump in the credit numbers, the total social financing, and at the start of the year. But like we wrote at the time, there's a number of reasons why, seasonal reasons and others, why those numbers weren't as impressive as they appeared to be on the surface. But that, I mean, we are kind of expecting That's just what we've been thinking over the last year that they are going to, because China, the CCP is really big into pageantry, and these big anniversaries for the party are really important culturally to them. And from the people that we talk to who are on the ground in China, the social mood has been really pessimistic over the last year or so. And it's just because the economy, I mean, the economy's not growing at 6.5%. I mean, that's, so I mean, everybody knows, we all know those numbers are made up, totally contrived. They're probably, maybe they're around 3%. Maybe they're, some even people argue that they're, probably negative. But all we know is that it's a lot slower, and people are negative, and the way the party works, that there's the odds are that they're gonna boost into their 100 year anniversary. And so if they do that, well, I mean, it takes, credit has like a lagging effect that usually takes roughly 9 months to work itself into the system. So that would mean they probably want to start really juicing things around the second half of this year. And if that's the case, then that, I mean, ultimately is a bullish tailwind, at least in the short term, for the shipping market. What we don't know is, we don't know how effective that credit injection will be. I mean, they might be at the point where it's just pushing on a string, and they don't have any really much of a credit multiplier effect at all. But we don't know that. All we do know is that these shipping stocks are really really cheap. And then, that is a bullish thing that's coming up. Everybody's pretty negative on China at the moment. So that's kind of a positive surprise that we might see in the second half of this year.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a pretty good one. I think I mean, certainly as we're sitting here staring at the markets going sideways on currencies and indecision going into an election year. Into an election cycle, I guess I should say, coming up. That's scary. This seems a little less scary when you're looking at moving, maybe some slower moving assets, putting some 401k money, putting some, finding places to throw pension. Probably a decent spot. I mean, you certainly don't want to be buying the top as often as you can buy the bottom, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you just got to pick wisely, because a lot of these companies, I mean, there are some companies that have horrible balance sheets, but a lot of them have cleaned up their balance sheets. So they don't, I mean, they're not overly leveraged. They already have positive free cash flow at charter rates that are this low, that are, like I said, they're near the third lowest point in the history of the index. And things are looking pretty good. So, I mean, maybe this isn't the exact bottom. But with this kind of things, it's, I mean, timing is almost possible. But definitely,
Right.
if you're not going to put a small position on, then put it on your radar and watch, because you have some of these things, like I said, they're trading basically at one times normalized cash flows, which is pretty nuts. So
Yeah.
you're not going to find any of these deals anywhere else in the market.
That's pretty that is definitely an interesting place to look at and probably get some of our option people to come in and look at interesting ways to finance the long-term position on that to slowly ease
Yeah.
into a long shot on that. That'd be interesting.
That would be very interesting. Yeah.
Well, all right. I think we covered that. Let's get together again and bring up everybody's favorite Tesla, maybe, huh? That's oh, did I just throw
Yeah.
that in the sh did I just clickbait this thing? Jeez.
Yeah, I think you did. But no, we should definitely do some Tesla, and then yeah, maybe talk some Ethereum
Oh boy.
afterwards.
I
I'm
don't know
sorry,
if that's
yeah.
clickbait anymore.
Yeah, but it's probably not. That's probably not helping. But yeah, no, I'm actually working on a little Tesla write-up. And one of our guys, our members, Byron, he just did a really good couple write-ups on it. So I
Yeah,
doubt I'm gonna find anything new, but just aggregate it, all those good stuff that's already been put out, and we could talk about it, because things are definitely getting interesting.
they are.
In that space, where at least everybody's talking about it. I don't know. So, well, so yeah, well, we could talk about
Yeah,
it.
well, I think I'm planning on talking to Byron next week. Maybe we should get all three of us on there and go after it for let's see if we can break the 3-hour mark.
Ooh, yeah, I think we can. I think
Challenge.
we got this.
All right. Well, thanks for the info on the shipping sector. Let's, hope there's no natural disasters that kicks it off too quick.
Yep.
Let it happen naturally, but hey, that could be another one. All right. Well,
good deal. All right, dude. Good talking, all right, man.
Thanks.
All right. Later.
Later.